He couldn't shake the feeling that he'd seen him before. Without that pompous sneer he'd been wearing at the gate, he could have been any of the 16 or 17-year-old wastrels Nott used to chase around the coppers. Even White Rose was copper-born, wasn't he? In another life, if he'd never had that bit of luck in saving the Gov, Keeper Notting might have found himself chasing that there boy halfway across the city over a loaf of the boy. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode, and not just any episode, but the second to last episode of this entire series. If you are not caught up yet, I highly encourage you to catch the last couple of episodes. You can catch a link down in the episode description for that, or for any of the recap videos, just to give you a reminder of where we are. For the rest of you, we last left off with Haytham and Elias's final showdown, where Haytham, after being shot with a crossbow, Haytham shot in the back with a crossbow, throws his arms around Elias, and dives off the balcony of the Grey Keep. If you have made it this far in the story, you are definitely not here for my recap, so let me get out of the way. I will catch you at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Colosseum. The double line of soldiers crowded around the balcony doors and gate. No one moved. Then one of them broke ranks and ran to the brink. He grabbed the balustrade where Lord Whiterose had been standing a moment ago and leaned over the railing. "He's in the river!" he shouted, pointing. The white foam bullseye was breaking apart as it followed the current. The houseguard tore off his gauntlets and flung them down. His sword belt clattered onto the balcony. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" Several of the others sprang toward him and tried to pull him back from the brink. "You'll never survive the fall."
"Captain, tell him it's madness!"
"Stand down, man."
The officer stalked through the knot of soldiers, his armor flashing like new pennies in the dawn light.
"That's an order."
The houseguard shrugged out of his comrade's grip.
"We can't just stand here."
His voice was tinged with hysteria.
"He could still be alive. He'll die if we..."
"No one said anything about standing here," the officer retorted. "But this is no time for heroics. It'd be a miracle if Lord Whiterose is still alive. It serves no one if you drown too."
The houseguard didn't answer. He looked down over his shoulder. Whiterose still hadn't surfaced.
"Were you ever a keeper, lad?" the officer asked.
"Aye."
"Do you remember the watchword?"
The guard didn't answer.
"Strength in order."
He held out a hand to him to give the counterphrase.
"Strength in brotherhood."
The other soldiers said in unison.
"Strength and brotherhood,"
the errant houseguard acknowledged. He saluted.
"Aye, sir."
"Good."
After that, he was all business. He turned to the rest of the assembly and began singling them out for different tasks.
"Governor Femeriel needs to hear what's happened. You two come with me. You two, stand guard outside the door. No one comes in, not unless he's with me. You, here, take this. Give that signet to Commander Holt and tell him Captain Reeve needs as many cloaks as he can spare to search the river. You, do you know your letters? Get a bird out to Larkspur and tell Commander Pike what to expect. I don't want some lowland dirt farmer fishing Whiterose out of the river for his buttons. The rest of you start combing along the riverbank for Lord Whiterose. Don't breathe a word about this to anyone. Not yet."
"And if he's alive, sir?"
"Then bloody well bring him back,"
the captain said thinly. The one who'd spoken dipped his head.
"I meant the other, sir," he muttered.
Captain Reeve looked back at the city sprawl. It was 200 feet to the water, 400 more if he went over the second step. No man but the devil himself could survive that fall.
"Then you sort that out before you bring him back," the captain growled. "No more missteps, you understand?"
They responded as one man.
"Aye!"
Reeve nodded and sent them out. He watched them stream into the corridor, the two he'd assigned to guard the chamber taking their posts just beyond the doors. The pair he'd selected to accompany him to make his report to the governor lingered. He sent them out with a flick of his fingers. The one who tried to follow Whiterose into the river was collecting his gauntlets and strapping on his sword belt. The captain met him on the balcony.
"Did you know him well?"
The guard looked up and tensed, seeing that he and Reeve were alone.
"Sir?"
"Lord Whiterose."
With few exceptions, the houseguards were trained from boyhood for the task of protecting their lord. But even a lifetime of training fell short of sending a man ass over elbows off the edge of the balcony for the near impossibility of recovering Whiterose alive. The guard nodded.
"I thought so," Reeve muttered. "I'm sorry for your loss."
He didn't reply.
"What's your name?"
"Sim."
"The
Simon, sir.
Well met, Simon. Take the rest of your morning and find your head. That's an order.
Respectfully, Captain, I can take it.
I'm sure you can, but I need you sharp if I'm going to put you on the search party this afternoon.
Take the morning.
He glanced back at the doorway where the other soldiers were waiting.
I'll let you pay your respects, but don't linger in here. It's bad for the nerves.
Aye, thank you, sir.
He was holding his breath. He didn't let it out until the battered doors boomed shut behind the captain. A relieved sigh rattled out of the thief. Only then did he peel off his plundered helm, his dark hair sweat pasted to his brow. He could hardly believe his good fortune. He'd hoped that he could linger long enough that in their haste to do the captain's bidding, the other guards would forget about him. But permission? Even so, he'd have to work quickly. There was no telling how long he'd have before the guards Reeve had left at the doors checked in on him, or even just peeked through the slivered holes their swords and halberds had left. And if they did, and if they saw what he was doing, there'd be no explaining it away. He moved his boot from where he'd been hiding the serrated hook. Again, it was a small miracle that none of them had taken more than a cursory look over the edge of the balcony, and that just to gauge the height of the plunge into the river. But if they'd leaned out as far as they could over the baluster and peered directly down, they'd have noticed something else. Just below, dripping blood into the enveloping whiteness of the falls, a dark, shapeless mass like an overripe fruit spun lazily at the end of 20 feet of silk rope. The brawl. He was dead. He had to be. If you didn't count the quarrel in his back, their plan had gone perfectly. Lee had come up with the scheme while he'd been waiting for Vanna, and after breathlessly explaining it to Hatham, Red Ugly had told him in no uncertain terms that it had zero chance of succeeding. He'd suspected that the brawler had only finally accepted the hook to shut him up about it. Lee's heart had plunged the moment he'd come through the doors, bellowing like the rest of them, of course, and he'd seen the ruin that White Rose had made of him. It was already over. But when he'd stood up and taken Elias over the side, it had taken no small effort on Lee's part not to cheer. He wiped his hands on a wall hanging in the sitting room and glanced at the doors to be sure he wasn't being watched. Then he squatted down among the glass shards at the edge of the balcony and braced his hobnail boots against the balusters on either side of the hook. He twisted his arm around the silk rope and took its weight. He immediately regretted it. It was lucky he'd braced his feet. Without it, the brawler's weight would have pulled him directly over the edge. That was one way to sneak out of the keep, he supposed. His muscles screamed. Sweat stung his eyes as he pulled. He was already soaked beneath his armor. He curled his other arm into the rope to give himself more leverage. The cord slipped from around his vambrace and tightened like a snare around his wrist. He yelped, and in the back of his mind, he prayed the guards in the hall didn't hear. He untangled his other arm and fished the steel hook off the floor. His trapped hand was purple and throbbing. It took him 3 tries to toss the climbing hook into the sitting room before it caught on the edge of the hearth and held. He gave it a sharp tug to be sure before he disentangled himself from the silk rope. He caught his breath, massaging blood back into his hand. He clambered to his feet and peered over the brink. The brawler was now maybe only a foot or so below the lip of the balcony. He reached for the rope, his right hand bristling with needles and braceleted by an angry rope burn. His stomach knotted. The wet from the river had made the rope stretch. The harness Lee had tied for his legs was failing as water bloated the knot holding it all together. Enough rope had already slipped through that Hatham could tip out of the loosened harness at any moment. Lee practically dove over the side, leaning as far as he could over the railing as he clawed for the harness. He didn't come close. He stumbled back and fumbled with the straps of his steel cuirass before giving up and hacking through them with a bloody knife he found on the balcony. The steel plates fell off with a clang, and too late did he remember the guards in the hall. He kept an eye on the double doors as he peeled off his chain shirt next and threw it down. He leaned over the railing and reached for the rope. His fingertips just barely grazed the top of the knot. He was on his toes, one hand holding onto the railing for dear life. A triumphant snarl ripped from his throat when his fingers closed around the knot, and after several more minutes of grunting and swearing, he pulled the body over the rail. Lee slumped down next to him, his head tipped back against the baluster, panting. He kept his half-lidded eyes trained on the double doors in case they came through. He didn't have a plan for if they did, besides aim his body for the river on the way down. He sawed through the harness with the paper knife and half-dragged, half-carried the brawler into Elias's bedchamber. It was hard not to think of him as the body. He closed the door to the sitting room and silenced the throaty roar of the falls. The servant door followed suit. Lee knelt beside him and felt for a pulse. Lee's throat went tight. He didn't feel it at first. He jabbed his fingers into Hatham's neck. There! The brawler's pulse was low and slow, almost imperceptible. Lee was half convinced he'd imagined it. But there it was, the double thump like distant hooves on the hardpan. He was alive. Lee almost sobbed. He could just barely make out the rise and fall of the brawler's chest. His hands were shaking as he pried off his vambraces and wriggled his fingers into his pocket under his armor. The little tin of smelling salts rattled in his hand. He'd almost left it behind when he was putting on the armor. It was awkward under the plate, like walking around with a pebble in your shoe. He pried off the cap. His eyes stung from the fumes, even at arm's length. He remembered the promise Hatham had extracted from him while they'd been waiting for Vanna. So much for all that. "Sorry, ugly," Lee muttered as he shoved the salt tin up under his nose. Nothing happened. Lee frowned. "Come on! Come on!" He mashed the tin against Hatham's nostrils. Nothing. Desperation made the hairs on his neck prickle. Only now did he let himself take in the extent of the brawler's injuries. He'd gone through hell since the arrest. Torture, imprisonment, near starvation, the beatings. And that was all before this last clash against White Rose. He'd lost a great deal of blood from the wounds on his arm and head. If the slash to his face had turned even a fraction of a degree, Elias would have put out one or both of his eyes. And then there was the quarrel. The broken shaft had been hanging on by a few fibers. It had fallen off while he dragged him into the bedchamber. There was no telling which of the brawler's organs had burst like grapes when they'd shot him. Lee's vision blurred. His hands were smeared with his friend's blood. "No, you're not allowed," he said through his teeth, pumping at his chest to force him to breathe. He left the salt tin against his nose. "You're not dying." Hatham's face twitched. His lips moved without sound. Lee stopped pumping and crouched down next to him. "What'd you say?" A long moment passed, then, "Get that out of my face." Lee laughed aloud as he ripped the tin away, spilling salt crystals across the coverlet. The brawler's breathing was still thin and shallow, but his eyes were open, if unfocused. "I told you to go," Hatham croaked. "You think now's gonna be when I start listening?" He made a face that could have been a smile or a grimace. "Can you sit up?" He tried and hissed in pain, falling back on the coverlet. "You're gonna have to do better than that when we walk out of here."
"Lee, I'm shot,"
the brawler rasped.
"Even if I could."
He stopped. His eyes turned to glass. Lee was about to hit him with the salts again when he muttered,
"Just go."
"I told you, your family." He looked down at him doubtfully. Even if he could remember the way back, Lee couldn't carry Hatham out through the Undercity. He glanced up at the drawn curtains. Cutting them up for ropes and lowering him from the balcony seemed a sure way to get them both spotted or killed.
"How do we get you out of here?"
Lee said under his breath, mostly to himself.
The study,"
the brawler managed. Lee looked down at him. Hatham leveled a trembling finger at the door to the sitting room.
"Yeah. Yellow powder."
His eyes drifted closed. Lee cracked the door and darted through the sitting room into the study. The roar of the falls drowned out the murmur of conversation from the soldiers in the hall. He found the jagged caterpillar on the desk, its tail stippled across the polished darkwood. He took a pinch and ran back to Hatham, hardly noticing the haggard reflection that darted past on the glass armor case.
"Hatham."
The brawler didn't respond. Lee sped to the edge of the bed and pressed the pinch of powder to his nose, tiny granules sprinkling the coverlet. His nostrils flared, and his eyes snapped open. His rough hand closed around Lee's wrist. He was relieved to feel some of that old iron in his grip.
"More."
Lee ran back for another pinch, and by the third he was standing on his own. He still looked like a strong gust of wind would knock him over, but his bloodshot eyes glowed with distant fire.
"Here.
He handed the brawler a little paper envelope he'd made from a scrap of one of White Rose's letters. A pinch or two of spice winked up at him.
Careful, that's all that's left.
Hatham stared at it, then crushed the envelope in his hand.
How do you feel?
Lee asked.
I can walk.
Good, you'll have to, at least until we're outside.
Hatham touched the gash on his face and winced.
Lee nodded. I have a plan.
He rapped his knuckles on the steel cuisse covering his thigh. He rinsed the paper knife in whiskey and set about tearing up Elias's bedsheets. By the time he'd finished, the sliver of daylight between the curtains was strong, and Hatham's face and forearm were bound tightly with silk. Lee had bandaged his side as well, but he left the barbed head of the quarrel where it was. That would have to wait until they got to Paul's.
Subtle,
the brawler grunted, studying himself in the privy mirror. Lee held up the houseguard's visored helm.
Put this on.
He slipped into White Rose's study and plundered his fancy plate out of the glass case. His own armor was littered across the three rooms in the balcony, and the cuirass was in pieces. The only piece he left behind was Elias's helm. The rose etched doubly in his visor, and the bleached white plume would draw too many eyes. Even with the captain's exhortation, he didn't trust the word hadn't begun to trickle out among the servants and soldiers. It was all they needed for their escape to be arrested by some armored half-wit seeing ghosts. It took a quarter of an hour, half the remaining spice and the thief's help to strap the brawler into the suit. But when he flipped the visor down, Hatham was gone. In his place was a knight, his polished chest plate bearing the crest of House White Rose. After a lifetime spent avoiding such soldiers, Lee's nape prickled instinctively when he looked at him.
Good.
The thief had washed up, then raided Elias's wardrobe, choosing for himself a pair of dark pants and a wine-red doublet. The ivory rose was embroidered across the back. He tipped his hat at a rakish angle, a shadow slashing across his features.
How do I look?
Like a ponce,
the brawler grunted. Lee thrust the paper knife through his sword belt next to the hand crossbow. White Rose, hand and a halfer, scraped the carpet from his other hip. Hatham crossed to the sitting room door and reached for the handle. Lee intercepted him.
Wait, there's still guards out there.
Hatham touched the plain leather hilt of the house guard's longsword on his hip. Lee shook his head.
I have another idea.
The end table groaned as he swung it away from the servant door. The door retreated into its slot in the wall. The low, dark passage stretched in either direction. Lee motioned the brawler into the tunnel.
First door you see, I'm right behind you.
Hatham paused in the doorway. Lee could see himself reflected in the polished steel. Their scheme suddenly felt terribly thin.
I'm right behind you,
Lee repeated. The brawler glanced back.
If someone sees...
They won't,
Lee insisted. Hatham prodded the toy crossbow on the thief's hip. The bundle of hornets in Lee's pocket was jabbing his thigh.
Be ready to use that.
Lee assured him that he was. He hoped that he was. He swallowed the stone in his throat and followed his friend into the dark. The horses came easier than he expected. Lee hardly needed to lie. The groom took one look at the young lord's fancy costume and barked for his stable boys to have a pair of rouncies saddled and shod.
Did me lord say what parts he was bound for?
North or maybe west, Lee told him.
Well, there's no place west of Dayspring with a better view than along the Sky Road.
The groom nodded.
Course there's naught like a good gallop across open country.
He leaned in close. Lee could smell the whiskey tang on his breath.
If you are hinterbound, keep an eye out for snakes.
There's more than one lord been stranded after getting his mount nipped by an adder.
Lee thanked him and refused his offer to help me lord into the saddle.
There's three bags of oats behind the saddle,
he called as Lee clopped away from the stable, leading the second horse along by the reins.
Don't be shy about feeding them.
Lee fought to maintain his aloof manner, for the horse as well as the groom. He'd never been in the saddle before. He'd have a fine task of explaining himself if he fell off the beast before they even made it to the gate. He squeezed the rouncies back between his knees until his legs throbbed, and he tugged the brim of his hat low to hide his features. Thankfully, the horse seemed to know what she was doing. She followed a well-beaten track across the manicured lawn. The bailey was in a bustle, a small army of servants lugging several long tables out onto the lawn while another platoon was raising a large yellow and gray canopy to keep out the sun. Several knots of nobles were wandering the grounds, or else lounged on one of the bridges in twos and threes. Double ranks of soldiers strutted about in formation, practicing swordplay. The clash of steel made Lee's nape prickle. He found Hatham where he'd left him on the raised porch behind the keep. Getting outside had been easy enough once they were out of the servant tunnels. Hatham hadn't sent a word since they'd left White Rose's rooms, but Lee could tell that he was in a bad way. His armor gleamed in the mid-morning bright. He was leaning against the wall, and his head was slightly bowed. He didn't react at all as Lee approached. Lee's jaw tightened. He jerked on the reins and hopped down, thankful for solid ground under his pointed boots. He bowed to a pair of noblewomen on his way up the steps.
"Sleeping on the job, Sir Simon?"
He heard the ladies titter as they slipped out of view. He clapped a hand on Hatham's shoulder and saw him start.
"Take another pinch and let's go."
Hatham showed him the empty envelope. Lee cursed and crumpled it, then flicked it into the river. The moment it touched the water, it swept under the porch and vanished below the keep. The ladies were watching him. They giggled and hid behind their fans when Lee threw them a little wave. He pulled himself into the saddle and resisted the impulse to give the brawler a hand up. Hatham was panting when he finally sat up on the horse. The Rounceys clopped over the bridge that spanned the river and made for the huge gate on the north wall. Lee counted a dozen helms flashing like silver eighth bits above the gate before he stopped counting. Then he saw the skulls, at least a score of them mounted on pikes above the wall. You could tell the fresh ones by the ravens circling above the battlements. Thankfully, the heads were facing outward, and Lee was spared their dread stare as he and the brawler approached. One of the guards came to greet them as the horses paused under the shadow of the gate without Lee's prompting. His pauldrons were scored with a horizontal golden line. His visor was up. A piece of his nose was missing, and one of his eyes was set in a permanent squint. He nodded to the riders.
"Not staying for luncheon, my lord?"
He bobbed his head toward the canopy unfolding at the other end of the bailey.
"Shouldn't be long now."
Lee smirked and glanced back at the canopy to buy him a few extra seconds to think. His mind raced to remember the chatter he'd overheard among the servants setting the tables in the great hall. He sniffed.
"When I care for the company of Northmen, I'll visit Sundervale myself. Their men talk and eat like hogs.
The women just look like them," he added, rolling his eyes. Tinny laughter erupted among the listening soldiers.
"Where are you headed?"
grinned the sergeant.
"Hinter, I've a mind to take Sir Simon here hunting."
"Hunting?"
His gaze dropped to the little toy crossbow on Lee's hip.
"You're packing awful light to go hunting, and him without any bow at all."
His eyes flicked from the brawler back to the thief. He was still smiling, but he'd cocked his head a little to one side.
"What'd you say your name was, my lord?"
"Hugo," Lee answered easily. "Son of Beck."
He said it with an air of ever so slight affront, as if the sergeant should have known without asking. Lee leaned over and rapped his knuckles against Hatham's engraved breastplate.
"Eldest nephew and heir to Lord White Rose."
At the mention of the governor's hand, the sergeant's face softened. Lee prayed that he hadn't heard about the murder.
"And to your question," he winked, "the sort of hunting I'm talking about calls for gold, not steel."
He jangled the purse he'd swiped from Elias's study. He knew he'd won the sergeant before he responded.
"I didn't know he had nephews,"
he remarked before ordering the gate open.
"As you were, Lord Hugo. Have a tumble for the boys on the wall."
Lee assured him that he would, then put his heels to the Rouncy and clopped through the gate.
"And while you're down there, keep your eyes peeled for
snakes, I know."
"I was gonna say the pox,"
he heard the sergeant mutter as he snapped shut his visor. The other soldiers sniggered at the sergeant's joke. Keeper nodding, now gate flunky nodding, hardly hurt him. He was holding the big iron ring in one hand, but his gaze trailed after the boy lord, the white rose blooming like a bullseye on his back. He frowned under his visor. He couldn't quite place it, but something about his face, his voice, his manner, something about him fingered a chord of recognition in Nott's mind.
"Close the bloody gate, Nott."
The boom of the other gate snapped him back. The rest of his detail was glaring at him, Sergeant Rag with arms akimbo.
"Permission to step out for a Sarge?"
He could feel the officer's withering stare, even behind his visor. But he granted it. Many a shift on the wall had been ruined by the stench from a guard squatting over a bucket.
"Make it quick."
The gate boomed shut behind him as he clanked across the tailored lawn and into the tree line to do his necessaries. He felt the glares of his comrades and the skulls on the parapet on the back of his neck as he slipped into the thicket. He hoped that their slender trunks would offer him enough cover. He knew he'd catch hell if anyone caught him, especially if the boy lord noticed him following and made a fuss. And hell was something Nott could hardly afford to catch. It hadn't even been a whole turn since his new orders from Lord Whiterose had come down. He hadn't made friends. When he ate, it was alone in a dingy corner of the mess. He'd already been sacked once. He'd heard a rumor that a few of the lads were taking bets on how long he'd last this go-around. On his first day, Rag had dressed him down in front of the whole unit after he smelled whiskey on Nott's breath. He'd promised that if he caught Nott drunk on duty again, he'd have him stripped, whipped, and set to shoveling pig shit down in Larkspur. All these reservations sat sour in his gut as he rustled through last season's leaves. He could feel the wet seeping into his boots, and he almost turned back, but that hunch he'd felt during the exchange between Rag and the boy spurred him on. Nott was many things, but he was also a damned good keeper. Promotion to the keep was something most cloaks in the rank and file spent their whole lives hoping to achieve. He doubted there was another buck in the whole history of their order who'd made the jump twice. Although if Rag sent him down to Larkspur, he doubted that even he could manage the feat the third time. At the edge of the grove, the cobblestone path that wound around the lip of the cliff was barely wide enough for two horses riding abreast, and that only if the riders' legs brushed against each other. Up ahead, where the path bent sharply to the right and thickened into the sky road, the dozen draft horses that powered the enormous cargo lift were cropping grass between turns on the pulley. Burly liftmen lumbered back and forth hefting crates, loading and unloading the cluster of wagons arriving from or bound for Haven. Nott had taken a shortcut through the grove, and he shrank down among the leaves as the two horses clopped into view. The knight's head lolled like a man fighting sleep. The boy looked nervous, Nott thought. He took another step back into the trees and hoped that the leafless winter branches would be enough to hide the glint of his armor. The crunch of leaves under his boot made him flinch. He froze. The knight didn't react, but the boy's head snapped in Nott's direction. His eyes narrowed. He squinted into the dappled shadows under the canopy. Hunkered down among the brambles, Notting stared back. He couldn't shake the feeling that he'd seen him before. He tried to place his finger on it. Had the nephew visited Whiterose during Nott's first stint in the keep? He didn't seem like the usual smirking sons of the High Lords. In fact, without that pompous sneer he'd been wearing at the gate, he could have been any of the 16 or 17-year-old wastrels Nott used to chase around the coppers. Hell, Notting had been one of those wastrels himself once. Even Whiterose was copper-born, wasn't he? In another life, if he'd never had that bit of luck in saving the Gov, Keeper Notting might have found himself chasing that there boy halfway across the city over a loaf of the boy. God's eggs, Notting breathed. It couldn't be. His certainty hardened as the horses strutted past and the boy looked away. He'd seen him on the rooftop and again in the crowd. He knew it was impossible, and yet there it was. The boy. The little His grinning face was etched in his memory. He'd picked him out of the crowd the morning of Whiterose's duel. He remembered the recognition, the fear he'd seen in his eyes before the crowd had forced them apart and let him escape. Nott's sword was halfway out of its sheath when another thought stopped him. What if he actually was Whiterose's nephew? Certainly he wouldn't be the first lordling in history to come down from the keep dressed to blend in. Then again, most of the nobles who did constrained their illicit activities to whoring and gambling, not nicking trinkets from cliffside manses. Still, everyone had his vices, didn't he? The horses were almost to the lift before Nott roused himself. The consequence for stopping him if he was a nobleman, embarrassing Lord Whiterose and earning himself a rap on the knuckles for his zeal, would be far less than that for letting some copper-blood thief escape with the governor's jewels. The row of skulls above the wall testified to that fact. He glanced back at the keep as he emerged from the thicket. The gate was obscured by a spit of trees. The boys on the wall wouldn't see him until he came back, dragging the boy by the scruff. The thought of the look on Rag's face when he came swaggering around the bend with his captive in tow bolstered Nott as he gave his back to the keep. He hitched up his sword belt so that it wouldn't drag, and he took off after the boy. The liftmaster was a big man with small eyes and hairy arms named Gwint. He hefted the crate he was carrying up on his shoulder and told Lord Hugo that he could make room for a pair of horses heading west. When Lee tried to palm him a crown from his purse, the big man waved him off.
None of that now. It's the least old Gwint can do for a lord of the keep.
He thumped the heavy crate down and motioned them onto the platform. Lee's horse took some convincing, and he bribed her with a few handfuls of oat from the saddlebag.
Just stay away from the sides, me lord,
cautioned Gwint before going back to his work.
Shouldn't be more than a few before we're ready to drop.
He had a surprisingly pleasant singing voice, Lee noticed, as the liftmaster joined the crew in belting out some old shanty or another. Once the horses were loaded onto the platform, the liftmen generally ignored Haytham and Lee, other than the occasional milord if they plunked their crate down alongside the thief.
How are you feeling?
Lee muttered with a sidelong glance at the brawler. Haytham didn't answer. His fingers were laced around the horn of his saddle. One of his gauntlets was slick with blood.
We're almost there,
Lee whispered, half to himself and half to the brawler. Haytham gave no indication he could even hear him.
Just hang on.
Hold!
The shout was nearly lost under the lusty chorus of singing liftmen. A few of them left what they were doing and emerged from among the stacks of crates, watching incredulously as the house guard sprinted up the path. Lee's heart leapt into his throat. He dismounted his horse and ducked behind a stack before he knew what he was doing. He could hear the house guard continuing to shout as he clanked toward him. He glanced over the edge. There was a channel connecting to the Jackson directly below. From this height, it was like a single blue thread against the browns and grays. There was nowhere to go. Certainly nowhere that he could bring Haytham. The end of the road. The liftman who had stopped to gawk at the house guard glanced questioningly at Gwint.
Keep loading, he told them. We've got a schedule to keep. What's his problem?
He muttered to Lee as the thief sidled up next to him. Lee ignored the question.
How long can you hold?
My lord?
The lift, how long can you hold for?
The liftmaster squinted up at the sun.
2 minutes?
Over Gwint's objections, Lee palmed him a crown.
Give me 3.
He felt the eyes of the liftman on his back as he darted across the road and into the trees. He listened close for the sound of the house guard's armor. He didn't need to go far. Indeed, he couldn't go far if he was going to catch Gwint's lift. Just far enough to lose the house guard, then double back in time for the drop. The leaves crackled and crunched with every step. He shot a quick glance back over his shoulder to make sure the soldier was giving chase. His armor flickered and flashed in the dappled light. He charged into the thicket and was coming at him slantways, a flurry of leaves swirling in his wake. Lee couldn't see Haytham or the lift anymore.
Good. All he needed was a few more seconds.
The protruding root was buried under a foot of leaves. It hooked his ankle and sent Lee sprawling before he had a chance even to cry out. He landed hard on his chin and tasted blood. He tried to scramble to his feet. Pain shot up his leg, and he buckled over with a cry. It took considerable effort not to cheer when he saw the boy go down. Nott slowed to a walk, one hand on the pommel of his sword, ready to lunge if he tried to bolt. The boy didn't try to get up. He lay flat on his face, half buried among the leaves. He was sobbing quietly. Nott advanced on him slowly, deliberately, no room for mercy.
On your feet, boy. Let's see some spine.
He raised his visor. He hoped the boy would recognize him.
We can do this 2 ways,
he murmured as the boy began to clamber gingerly to his feet.
You can come easy, or I can...
The hand crossbow swept up from among the leaves and was pointed at his face before he had a chance to react. Nodding, never said a word. The hornet pierced his chainmail gorget and crushed his throat. His mouth filled with blood, he managed to take one more step toward the boy, and he drew his sword halfway before the forest floor rose to meet him. His last thought was that he hoped the searchers found him before the crows did. Lee stared down at the imprint of the soldier's body in the leaves, his pulse thundering in his ears. He was grateful that he couldn't see the blood. He kicked leaves over the corpse until he couldn't see the glint of his armor. Then he vomited. 2. He set his face toward the cliff and limped back the way he came. It was slow going. His ankle was badly sprained, and he had to brace himself against the tree trunks to keep from falling. Fortunately, his trail through the leaves was easy to follow.
and he was greeted by the liftman singing the maid, the mouse, and the meat pie as he emerged from the tree line. Gwent nodded when he saw him. Lee plucked a twig from his hair and tried not to visibly limp as he slipped onto the platform and climbed back into the saddle. The liftmaster didn't ask again about the guard. He knew better than to stick his nose in a lordling's business. He barked for his second to loose the anchors, and the lift shuddered as the cliff rose up around them. His strong baritone held together the rest of the crew's rough chorus. Lee looked over at Hatham, still sitting tall in the saddle, his head bowed. He listened to the words of the liftman's song and tried to push down the image of the soldier standing there gurgling after he'd shot him, the hornet sticking halfway out of his neck. He hummed along as they descended.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I can't believe there is just one episode left in this entire story. If you have been following Last Colosseum from the beginning, truly, truly, just a massive thank you from the bottom of my heart. And if you're somebody who has begun following the story more recently, welcome to the party. I will have a few more things to say after next week's episode, but until then, you know the deal. Like, comment on the YouTube video, 5-star review if you're listening on podcast, and as always, it is a huge favor if you share it with a friend. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you next week for the last episode of Last Colosseum. I'll see you then.